Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. The game we're talking about is Alone in the Dark, 2008. This isn't the Alone in the Dark I was thinking about.
Once you get into Central Park, it actually becomes a sandbox game.
How accurate is the depiction of Central Park?
Remember a time when a sandbox map the size of Central Park was considered big enough?
It definitely feels big enough in this game, too. Because you have to drive in the car, it becomes a 50-50 chance that you will accidentally propel yourself off a cliff.
One time I remember I was driving in this game and I drove over a curb and basically the entire car's suspension just flew off.
That sounds like Central Park. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lay maintain with a course saving the colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinata, Ogre Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We're going to have what I believe will be possibly our greatest episode to date, and I'm basing that on the cool cover art. That's right, we're talking about Saga Frontier, which was nominated by @CoolNewDad and @BonusLizard. Hey, BonusLizard, and hey, @CoolNewDad. I think this is @CoolNewDad's first nomination, I think.
First and last, if you hear the contents of this episode.
Yeah, they've stopped listening like months ago. They were like, combat? That's ridiculous.
They're now cool new grandfather, right? Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're no longer a new dad. They've had two other kids. So this game was developed by Square Product Development Division 2, those purveyors of quality. Actually, I don't really know what else Division 2 did, so...
A lot of Saga stuff. And a lot of...
Oh, Hollywood. They're the weirdo unit, right?
Basically. And that's why they're the best ones.
That's why we
the
call
people
the
who never
division.
Technically left the office, they just slept there, they ate there. They got married there.
They probably
they
developed a junction
children
system.
There. Yeah.
No, that's too straightforward for Kawazu.
Oh, yeah, that's not so, wrong.
It's like a weird cult, is what we're trying to say. They're like giant
Kalima,
marriages.
Kalima.
Yeah. Human sacrifices, weird scenes inside the gold mine, the works.
Glade, come over here.
So this game
they,
is
like,
published.
Superstitiously give them money, like Square? They're like, look, we have to give these guys like $20 million a year or the company will go bankrupt, I think.
Yeah, they don't technically get paid. They just make games and nobody... They're like the elves and the cobbler. Like, they make the shoes It's just like you just show up to work one day and there's a weird new game.
So old HG101 lore was that Kawazu was a brain in a jar that somebody accidentally dumped like shoe polish into.
And the brain just gobbled it up and spits out games. Yep. So this game was spit out by, it was published by Sony Computer Entertainment in North America. That sounds odd.
I'm not too surprised about that.
I mean, they were... This just seems weird. No, it does seem odd because they were very anti 2D.
right?
Oh, yeah. On the other hand, FF7 was still very fresh on people's minds, and this was an RPG from the same base company, so clearly this is going to sell magnificently.
Do keep in mind if you've never seen this game, it does use fully pre-rendered SCI workstation environments and stuff. So.
Oh man, the pre-rendered stuff looks fantastic.
At least on the box and stuff, you're like, oh cool, it's clearly another like 3D pre-rendered game. So I think that might
we should probably mention it was a PlayStation game for the original PlayStation. It was first released on July 11th, 1997 in Japan. And I think we got it approximately a year later in North America. And, we definitely did not mention in an earlier, recording that totally had to be, scotched and replaced with this one. That definitely did not happen. But if it had, what we would have mentioned already by this point is that a lot of people, this game did sell pretty well in North America. Oh yeah. Who's here with me to discuss Saga Frontier?
That's why we do it first. Hi, I'm Clade.
And I'm Carl.
And I'm Word on the Wind. The only person who likes this game.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everyone.
Good to still be here.
But
for now, it is. Yes. We'll work on that.
It's going to be a long night.
But yeah, so that business about, clearly this is going to sell real well. It did. The problem is Square rushed it out the door at about 70% complete. There were supposed to be 8 playable characters. Instead, there's basically about 6.5.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You know what would have made this game better? An 8th playable character. That would have made it super. That would have made all the difference in the world. So that's a good segue into what is weird about this game.
I mean, having 8 playable characters in a Saga game is nothing new. Every single Saga game up till that point had 8 playable characters.
But what's different about this one? So, I want to ask this real quick
before we do that. Because you've just said 8 playable characters. Square has recently released Octopath. For our listeners that have no experience with Square Saga games, is that a spiritual successor? Is this a spiritual predecessor?
In a bit, it is. It's got a lot of Saga conventions going for it. So if you're someone who likes Saga, you're probably going to like Octopath a lot.
Maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here, and we need to talk about, like, what is the Saga series? Because yeah, I think that I is something that maybe...
Point of reference. Yeah. And now, yeah. So you load up the game, what do you do?
Final Fantasy II.
The Japanese one, right?
Yes.
The Final Fantasy that nobody liked, grew up to be...
You mean the one that we never got in the West until the GBA version?
No. It was on Origins.
Okay, look.
The EA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The GBA.
All right. All right, you two. All right.
Somebody explain what Saga Frontier is before I leave.
I would like to, but people Saga keep talking over me.
Is a JRPG without experience points. Okay. Word, explain that.
Yep. So when, as in FF2, since Clay had brought that up, characters advance by actually performing actions. The more you perform an action, the better at it you get. So you swing swords, you get better at swinging swords. Hey, you're good at swinging swords? That requires muscle, so your muscle gets better. That kind of thing.
Right.
It has a reasonably logical progression of how a character would improve by doing specific things,
especially if they're hitting themselves with the sword. Because as we all know, that should increase both your sword ability and your getting hit by swords ability.
That is a thing that they left in.
And then you can increase your healing magic ability by healing yourself and then doing it over and over again until all the imps run away.
That's true, that's efficiency in FF2.
Yeah. But that's not a thing that you can do in the Saga series.
I gotta say, like, this is what I love about... Who's this guy again? What's his name?
Kazuha.
Oh, Kawazu?
Kawazu,
yeah. He's like the mad genius of JRPGs without the genius.
Oh, I disagree entirely. The genius is there because, get this. He has gone on record saying that he does not pay close attention to the details of his games because he wants to be surprised when he plays them.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's like a director saying, I don't know. I don't pay really close attention to the details of my movies. I want to be surprised when I see the movie.
I just let the editor edit it at random, and hopefully the movie comes out at the end.
Whoa, holy shit, this movie has an ending?
It's like Shyamalan. I didn't film that.
I really like what I believe is a Quentin Tarantino impression I'm getting here. It's good. I want to hear more of that later on.
It's my impression of every guy who is pulling a fast one on his on the public. That's what that name is.
Bear in mind that Kawazu is one of the longest lasting Square employees. He has been around longer than Rinobu
like
Sakaguchi,
who
did Final Fantasy.
He runs a weird blood cult in the basement. There are like, they marry stuffed animals. It's crazy.
I also like to think he codes in binary.
Just, I mean, like okay, think so I'm gonna have to, I don't know. I don't like to have to, you know, get this back to the game that we have to talk about. But it's
yeah, the thing I've been trying to do.
Yes,
yeah, so, actually allegorical to Saga.
The point is, really, is this guy's games are weird and they're wonderful in the weirdest possible way.
Yes,
like when you sit down to play one of Kawazu's games, what you're doing is you're investing some valuable moments of your life, like minutes you'll never get back, but you're what you'll do with that is you're getting huge returns and absolute insanity, like mechanics that serve no purpose other than to befuddle and enrage. And fans of these, and I'm not I love the Final Fantasy Legend games for the Game Boy,
were originally one, two, and three.
I love those games. Love them.
They're great.
I loved them not just because they were Final Fantasy games and that was the only kind of like, you know, RPG you could get on the Game Boy that you could actually find in the store, because they sold well enough they got re-released as like, you know, best sellers and all that stuff. So you could get them pretty easily. A lot of people played them and they're fun and cool, and they were actually worked really well on the Game Boy. I don't really know, because then after that they turned into what, Romancing Saga?
Yes, the Romancing Saga series 1, 2, and 3 are all on the SNES, and then the PlayStation iterations are Saga Frontiers 1 and 2. Do note that none of these games have any particular connection to each other, very much like Final Fantasy.
Wait, Romancing Saga isn't connected?
I thought all those were... They're connected by like the
by
guy
name
who doesn't
want
to pay attention to his games because he wants to be surprised when he played them. They're connected by that guy.
I'm always the hero in these. It's amazing.
Yeah,
so, that's a funny thing because Kawazu had nothing to do with Saga 3, and incidentally, that's the weakest of the Game Boy sagas.
Like I said, I didn't mean like he's the mad genius without the genius in the sense that he's not good at what he does. It's more just like he's mostly crazy. That's my point.
He's
like,
crazy in the best way. I always adore like reading anything he has to say because it's endearing to me.
Yeah, it's just bonkers. It's all crazy. So this game was, I think, started out as a kind of the next chapter, not chapter, because they don't really relate to each other in any way, as we just said, but the next entry in the Romancing Saga series. And at some point, like, this is the wrong kind of bonkers, crazy, insane game. Like, it's a totally different Saga game. We're going to call it Saga Frontier.
The funny thing is, like, yes, this was originally going to be RS4, but then they backed out of that because of, you know, various reasons that I'm not going to get into. But it actually has more to do with Saga 2, more so than a lot of the RS series, because that was the last time that you were able to have monsters and robots in your party, as well as kind of like freakish humanoids that weren't human, but could pass really close to it.
Mutants.
In this case, they're called Mystics, which you can interpret as vampire.
Yeah, so yeah, those like in weird... the Final Fantasy Legends games, those are the mutants, right?
Yeah.
The magic-using humanoid-type things with the pointy ears. They look kind of like little Yodas, because they had like their ears. They weren't just, because on a Game Boy, like if you want to show pointy ears, they got to be sticking out to the side, man. Like you're not going to tell. And they've got like patch eyes and stuff. This is how I remembered anyway. So,
what's
different about this game besides that? Like, were they like, well, we can't call this Romancing Saga. We got to call it Saga Frontier.
That's an excellent question, Word. I've been wondering that for ages.
I asked that question.
There's not really any good definitive reason other than we've had our various series on, you know, different platforms called a specific thing. You know, the Game Boys are just Saga, the SNES ones are Romancing Saga, and as I said, the PlayStation ones are Saga Frontiers. So it's just kind of like a naming convention sort of thing more than anything else. That being said, there also is like a little bit of a tee-hee sort of thing in that a major area in Romancing Saga 1 is called the Frontier.
So everybody can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. I was just making sure because I said something and then people kept talking. And usually that means something went horribly wrong.
You set me into exposition mode. You should expect things.
Yeah. So what's weird about this game that I would say, like if I were going to, Like, I never really got to give my anecdote, but I got this game because I was like crazy about JRPGs. I'm like, I want to play more of these. And, you know, like, they used to be really expensive things to buy on the Super Nintendo because they were huge cartridges and all that. And on PlayStation, everything's kind of the same. And it's like, it's a single disc. This is like going to be like a very, you know, like, this is going to be good. And the artwork on the cover looks like it's kind of generic, but it looks cool. And the screenshots are gorgeous. And I gotta say, like, the coolest thing about this game is the artwork. Not necessarily the workstation pre-rendered graphics, but the backgrounds are really nice.
Those are also rendered on workstations.
Incidentally, the thing that got my attention about the game was the fact that I couldn't actually make out what the title logo was when I saw images for it on the back of, I think, the Final Fantasy Tactics manual or box or something. I was like, what is this? This is something Frontier. I must investigate this.
Am I confusing the backgrounds with the Saga Frontier 2? Those were the ones that were like...
Saga Frontier 2 is the watercolor
one. Yeah.
This one is all ugly. Okay. So,
hey, those
cancel
are the same
that.
Backgrounds that you said were good in Final Fantasy VII. I remember that.
No, they were good. They were good. Yeah, I'm just joking.
I will be, you know, fair here. Saga Frontier does suffer from the same kind of where the hell is the exit syndrome that FF7 is rife with.
Wait, does this one have arrows?
It doesn't have the arrows, but it does have, like, the pointer of, like, where the hell you are.
It also suffers with the where the hell is the plot and where the hell are the characters and what the hell am I doing syndrome.
Yeah. So you can thank the fact that it's only 70% done for that for the most part.
We said, right, that you got, like, technically 7 playable characters. We have said that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There's really only maybe 2 to 3 characters worth of game spread out across the whole thing, so no matter who you pick, you just kind of feels like you're missing parts of the game.
Not really. As I said several times, there's a lot of stuff missing here. The idea is that a lot of characters' narratives happen at different points in time, so moving around during certain set pieces with one character will show, like, another character in the middle of their set piece while, you know, there are things in play that you wouldn't see in the other character's set piece. Like, there's a moment where, if you're playing Red, you can see Amelia and her boyfriend, whose name escapes me off the top of my head.
Doesn't matter.
But they're, you know, actually there hanging around. And that means that this either takes place before or after her story, if she got the good ending.
But it doesn't matter, because, like, you don't, like, have to play the other stories. Like, that's the crazy thing, is you're expecting... This is what I expected. I was like, oh, my God, 7 characters? So I can pick anyone to start with, and then I get to go back, and, like, once I finish a story, like, I'm going to get to switch characters, and they're all going to meet up in the end, like a Seinfeld episode where all the plots converge. And no, that
that's
doesn't happen.
That's what I was going to go with. Was that ever planned?
That wasn't really planned.
What?
I can say, though, that if you do finish with all the characters, you do get to go to the dev room.
Yeah.
Oh,
that sounds like
final
a hard
climax game. That I really want.
Like, you just go in there like, we're sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I'm very, very sorry.
Oh, we messed up.
It's like the classic, like, you know, like, 2 Japanese men in, like, suits, like, kind of bowing and like, apology, like, sincere apology.
Oh, no, like, all the devs use, like, monster sprites.
It's like Evangelion, but they're all clapping going, we messed up.
I'm tolerating a lot of nonsense over here, but don't you damn dare compare this to Ava.
Okay, so...
Well, I mean, Ava has it.
That's a line.
No, I mean, so,
there's only like 2 dead ends in that series. This one is 7 dead ends. It is...
So, well, the big thing here, though, is the game just kind of does dump you in. Like, you don't really have any real nudging towards a particular character or any sort of, like, anywhere to grasp. So it's entirely possible to pick the one character who basically isn't finished as your starting character, which is not good.
Yeah, don't if you do decide to pick this up, and I personally recommend it, these clowns won't, but don't play Lute. Lute is the one who is absolutely not finished.
So they're all kind of weird. Like, what attracted me to the game is I like the idea of, like, 7 different characters, and they're really different. Like, there's, like, a superhero, and there's, like, a robot, I think. And
there it is. That's the one I was playing.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's, like a witch or something. I don't know. I can't really remember the other ones. But the point is that...
They're all distinct and interesting.
They're all distinct and interesting.
And they've all got distinct scenarios.
Yeah. The other crazy thing about this game is a very weird for a JRPG, especially at this time, is that I think it's pretty much like you can go anywhere right from the beginning with almost any of the characters.
This is a very non-linear game, especially with especially with some characters more than others. Like Red and Amelia have mostly linear things that give you points to, you know, go mess around, go grab stuff that's available in given places that, you know, if you've played other characters, you'll know about and you'll want to go get. Whereas other characters, like, say, Blue, have very open structures that they're just like, okay, here's your broad goal, get on that when you feel like it, and go have fun exploring.
Right. It's the weirdest feeling, especially when you've played through one scenario, and then you play another, or if you're like me, you played through 60% of another scenario and then gave up. And tried another one. You're like, maybe this one will be fun. And then you run into that first scenario, and it's like playing an MMO where there's like only four other players. That's the experience of this game. It's like you can go anywhere and do anything, and you'll see four other people who, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like just crazy.
It lacks that like environmental density that I think the WRPGs, which are similar in structure to this compared to JRPGs, those games are typically full of just nonsense, you know, like literally hundreds of NPCs who are just like, welcome to this town, here I walk around, and that guy's the blacksmith. And that's
hey, you guys want a throwback? This used to be hilarious. I used to be an adventurer, and then I took an arrow. You never know when you're going to run into that guy.
Man, but the strength of those was basically each place that you went to had just a bunch of extraneous crap that didn't mean anything. It was completely pointless, and I don't know why people care that much about it. But it did make the game, each area you went to, at least kind of feel like its own space. In this game, the environments, at least as far as I could tell, are mostly either you're supposed to be there, so some stuff is happening, or it feels unfinished. There's not a lot going on in that particular area at all. And if
it
you accidentally
really depends
lose
on where
your
you're
plot
going.
Thread... you can end up bouncing around a lot, and it's just like, what am I doing here? And they're like, nothing! And you can't pick up any quests, because the game is not really about giving you too many, like, side quests. I think it does have them, but there's not, like...
No, side quests absolutely exist.
Yeah.
They're there. It just...
You know, and for some characters, they're not side quests at all. You know, some characters are just able to do the main quest things of other characters if, you know, that's just how it happens to roll out.
Right, which in a way sounds really cool, but in reality just feels like, I already did this. Like, if you're really going to play through the game and play through all the seven characters, and you're going to see some of the same stuff, and you're going to feel kind of ripped off.
Well, see, here's the thing where I'm actually going to get into the bulk of my argument here. Because, like I said, I've been letting you guys just kind of run rampant with all of your opinions and whatnot.
That's the name of the show.
Mm-hmm. All of your science over there.
How we do.
And ultimately, what pretty much any Saga game ultimately comes down to is, you know, they're very much a niche experience. They're for the kind of person who likes to explore in a game without having their hand be held. This is a game where, in addition to exploring the environment, you're also exploring just what is the game itself capable of on, you know, any given level, a narrative, a mechanic, whatever. You're there to figure out how the game works. If that's the thing that kind of appeals to you, this is absolutely, you know, a wonderful game to play, and that's why I adore the hell out of it.
There's better Saga games for that.
True.
But I mean, if I'm going to suggest one for, you know, someone who isn't used to this kind of thing to play to just kind of break into it, I would suggest Romancing Saga Minstrel Song on the PS2, because that's the most transparent Saga game as far as mechanics are concerned.
Okay. Yeah. So mechanics, that's a good point. So we're going to have to rank this really soon because I'm done. But before we do, I think we owe it to our listeners to, like, are there any interesting mechanics in the game? Like in the combat
we haven't
system?
Talked all about the combat system.
Well, you got 3 minutes. Go nuts.
The combat is wonderful. So I mentioned before that there are four main races. You got humans, you got mystics, you've got mechs, and you have monsters. Each one plays very differently. The closest are humans and mystics, but there's not that much overlap there. Humans will do the thing, as I mentioned earlier, where when you do a thing, they get better at it, and they do that pretty quickly. They are also capable of doing the iconic thing of the series of sparking a move, which is to say, okay, you just say, swing your sword, and then a light bulb flashes over their head, and they go, hey, I figured something out. And then they, like, smash the enemy even harder with a different move, like, say, slam or something. And then they have that move forever. They can just use that instead.
So, does this one have the combos? Or is that not
combos
later?
Do exist in this game.
All right.
And was kind of attempted to build off of something that RS3 attempted but didn't really succeed at doing. You can, in fact, link up your various characters' spells, attacks, techniques, and whatever in all given right. ways so that you get a higher net damage result, and it looks pretty cool when you see all your characters in action just kind of like playing volleyball with the Lord of Hell. That's pretty great.
And let's talk about the randomness, which is where this feels kind of bad, and I don't like this game, because you can like dive, refight the same battle, and lose all the techniques that you lost.
We didn't even bother to mention that this thing, because did the other Saga games do this, or is this the first one that does, I actually kind of like appreciate the direction, is this idea that you get full health at the end of every fight. There's no, you do have potions, but they're only to be used in a fight. Yep. And I think that's really clever, like, let's just make each fight a kind of threatening fight to the death. The flip side is that a lot of the fights are a fight to the death, so...
yeah.
That is the thing that is regular in the series. Romancing Saga on the SNES is the one that pioneered having health and life points be two different resources, health being, you know, more of a buffer, and life points being the things where, if this runs out, the character is fucking done. You can just say goodbye to them. They are actually dead.
Oh, and this one, you just have to go back to an inn.
This is the one of the exceptions to that. You can hit an inn, and they will recover life points even if they've hit zero, as long as it's not your main character.
Which is good.
The game is definitely more focused on, like, if you're going to be doing any management, it's going to be over your equipment and your skills/spells, as opposed to having to juggle, like, oh, I only have so much of this, I'm not going to be able to make it to the dungeon. It's like, no, you can absolutely make it to the end of the dungeon. It's just a matter of, can you contend with the dangers within?
Although you do have some diminishing resources,
you should be able to.
Your weapon points, is that what they're called? WP? They drain over time when you use them.
Your Waza points deplete when you use, you know, weapon skills like swords, martial arts, and guns. Fun thing about those in Jutsu points, which are the JP, if you have enough characters so that you can field a second team, if you're any team that you're not using in combat will recover a little bit of their Waza and Jutsu points after every combat that they're not participating in. So if you have a large enough team, you can absolutely just make it through without needing something to restore either of those resources if you're able to juggle it around.
So if anyone hasn't caught it out yet, what I think is one of the main stepping blocks or stumbling blocks with this particular game, and not necessarily the franchise as a whole, is that I do think this one gets better the more times that you finish it, which is an incredibly difficult buy-in for this one, because I don't know how many people will be willing to do that, essentially. The game doesn't explain itself super well, for the most part. Like, the combat stuff
The game
basically
doesn't explain itself at all. Like, it's difficult to approach. I don't deny that.
The randomness has always been its really biggest
You
problem.
Say randomness, and I'm just kind of over here going, what randomness are you talking about?
The Matrix in this game. Word, please tell me how many times you've finished this game. I think that's something I want to know.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I have finished Blue's scenario 3 times. I've finished T260's scenario. I've finished Red's. I've finished Amelia's. I've finished Riki's. And I finished Ocellus. I have,
like,
not finished.
What I'm saying with random is, like, I've started scenarios and gotten, like, 3 skills in a row, and then I've started scenarios, like, the same scenario sometimes, and I won't get anything for ever.
Oh, you mean, like, as far as, like, Waza Sparking?
Well, Sparking, or even just, like, stat games.
So, every human character has a chance to learn any given move within, like, a tree structure.
Well, yes.
And certain characters are better at learning certain skills than others.
Well, yeah, no. My problem is, I understand the mechanics. I'm saying
they have advantage dice rolls, and yes, it is random. Like, that is something where you just kind of roll in and take what you get and work with it.
That being said,
use certain characters, you can angle it so it's like, okay, this character gets, like, really good chances of getting the moves for the DSC super move, which uses four moves in one.
But to get to my point again, it makes learning the mechanics really unfun.
It's a very difficult one.
I don't know. There's something to be said for, you know, having a rather dire moment where a boss is just kind of whipping your ass, and then you just, like, say, all right, just double slash this bastard. And then your character just belts out triple thrust and is just juggling them on their own, doing colossal amounts of damage.
Or you die. And
Amount of times that you get... Oh, can I mention this game has a quick save, which I've loved. I love it. It has quick save.
Yep, you do not have to go straight to the memory card and sit through the PlayStation load times every single time you want to save. I think, was I correct in that it's R1 plus triangle?
I believe it's R2 triangle, I think.
R2 triangle.
Quick save.
Excuse me. Yeah, very forward thinking that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that because okay, I kept it scrubbed later.
So let's...
good armor is important.
Let's rank this bad boy. Scrolling down...
I do want Warren to sort of sell people on this game, mostly for the listeners who have somehow went, I'm interested in this now that you're talking about it.
I can't imagine who that might be. So, Warren,
I mean, you say that, but there are all kinds of Saga communities that I've been in. It's also worth noting that at one point in time, Saga was Japan's third most popular JRPG series behind DQ and FF specifically.
I can't imagine that.
That's...
There are many people that have done mods for, like, all kinds of different Saga games. There's one insane one for RS3 that pulls characters from everything up until Unlimited Saga and crams them into the same game and puts moves in from later things. It's amazing.
That is bonkers. Like, that is crazy.
Did it end after, like, Suikoden came out, or...?
I think this game came out after Suikoden. So
yeah, Suikoden was like the same week as Final Fantasy VII. Rip Suikoden.
Oh, no.
I want Word to do one more thing before we go ahead and rank it. I want to hear her opinion on whether, if between the two Saga Frontier games for the PlayStation, right?
Okay.
What's the best foot forward situation? One or two? For new players, for neophytes, for people who didn't even live through the PlayStation generation, they were born in, like, I don't know, like after 9/11 or something, and like their whole world is upside down and crazy, and they don't know anything. Like, what? Where should they start? Or should they start?
If I'm allowed to put forward an asterisk of the recommendation comes with a couple of notes to avoid rookie mistakes, I would say Saga Frontier 2. Because that is the most linear story-driven Saga game in the entire franchise, and the story is brilliant.
So, if you're coming from like a hardcore JRPG angle, right? Like,
yeah, I really like Saga Frontier 2.
Yeah, SF2 is great. I didn't like it at first because I was coming off of this one, and it plays very differently, and it has way more in line with the romancing sagas than the Game Boy sagas do.
This game is a lot more mature and fun, as far as I'm concerned.
It's giving you like
your own fun, but it's like it has such a very strange and non-standard setting that I'm totally
fine with
that. I love
the world because it is like exactly Phantasy Star, and I'm like, I love it. I'm adoring this. I love people like swords, guns, magic, whatever.
You've got your functional equivalent of Hong Kong, and in it you've got, you know, like vampires running street stalls for, right, you know, noodles, and then like you go through some back alleys and there's a mech running an illegal weapons shop while, you know,
like, joke in there that I wanted to mention where, like, as the robot, the guy with the pipe cuts a rope with his pipe and it's like, what's up with that? And then the skeleton that you meet in that area is like, my god, there was like this guy and he cut a rope with a pipe. It's terrifying. And
it's like, hey.
Yeah, like, this is one of the only times I'm like, oh, that was really nice. I wish the game was lots more of this, because that was fun. I'm like...
So...
Again, it's pretty great.
We're done talking about this.
Yeah.
We're almost going to be done ranking it, because I'm going to put it at...
I'm going to put it right where UN Squadron is.
Okay, not going there. It's going...
196.
It's going closer to, like, think that plus about 100.
Well, that does put it below Lunar.
Well, no.
Where's Lunar?
Lunar is 256. Anyway, I was actually looking, by the way, at 247, which is Master of Magic. It's a personal favorite of mine, and it has at least got a similar, like, we bit off or ended up taking way more than we could do in its, like, thing. And it's got, like, a strong community behind it that love the game, but know that it's, like, well, yeah, but it's still, like, busted out the ass in all kinds of ways.
So,
but
that's it. That's a good starting position. Let me just put it here. Like, I feel like this belongs in the, I want to say, I'm thinking like more of the Donkey Kong Country 3 range. A game that we don't know why we put it where we did, because that episode is lost forever.
So, I mean, Donkey Kong Country 3 is garbage.
It's not garbage. It's acceptable. Yeah,
it
and that's
how can it possibly be garbage? It's a 279. That's good. That's a good game.
We've got so much below 279 anymore.
That's true. We are at like 420 something.
We keep going. We keep going, you know. We're going to keep doing
it. It's scary. This is the worst idea I've ever had, this whole show.
Yeah, you've had to become friends with me. That's
we're not
my
friends.
Big thing with Saga here.
All right.
Let's not go nuts. Jeez, Troy. Come on, man.
Number six, you were saying, Word.
This game is better than Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, my God. Okay, like, no. All right.
Because we
like
actually have, as you know, our 250 below range does have Luna. Clay, it's got Luna in there. Got Tales of the Abyss. Got Lagrange Point. And we've got Dragon Force, all in this sort of...
And none of which have anywhere near as an inspired setting.
I gotta put it above Lunar, below Star Tropics. That's where I would put it. Because I do feel like this game is just bonkers enough, just crazy, just wacky and wild enough stuff here that it's like, you gotta commend them for being so oblivious to what makes this kind of game like...
Saga is a series that is not afraid to do its own fucking thing. It does not follow standard convention.
The challenge with this one isn't that it's non-standard. It's unfortunately that the game is not.
It's not finished.
That's the big caveat.
But it's like we're going to build a game and we're not going to do the traditional game thing.
Like finishing.
It's like you can change stuff about games, but like what this does is like we're going to make a JRPG, but we're not going to do the traditional JRPG thing. It's kind of like we're going to design a wheelbarrow, and guess what? There's no wheel.
That's the kind of philosophy.
Is this
a big hole in the ground that you push the wheelbarrow through? Is that how it works?
No, the better way for this analogy to work is that it doesn't have a wheel. It has like sleds, and it's meant to go over snow.
And yet, it's only sold
in
the Bahamas.
Hawaii.
At least Lunar is a functional wheelbarrow.
It actually works,
and reasonably well.
I mean, that's the big problem is simply that because it's not finished, it cannot realize its ultimate ambition. It sounds like
even if it were finished, it wouldn't be that different. That's the thing I'm getting from all this.
So here's a fun thing. I'm sure at least a couple of you are aware that like a lot of Square games in particular have like these like super guidebooks called like Ultimatium or something like that, where they have like they're kind of like the dev diaries and strategy guides in the same way.
Yeah.
So there's one of those for Saga Frontier that's called Essence of Saga Frontier. And basically, if you want the narrative, you have to read that, which is unfortunate. Because if the thing was more finished, that would be in the game.
So it sounds to me
and
like
it
what you're
really
saying is
interesting stuff.
It goes lower than Lunar.
Yes!
Yeah, that was like, that's not
that
a
was
good
a risky,
thing that
like,
you just said.
Please
because
buy
the bad ending for
you have to buy
a lot of
book
the bad endings
that comes
are the canon endings.
Separately and is not in your language in order to understand
yeah,
what the game would have been.
Game.
Yeah.
I mean,
to go to the wheelbarrow
complete. It's in the name.
Lunar
well,
to use your
to be
bizarre
fair,
wheelbarrow analogy.
We built 90% of the wheelbarrow. It's just we didn't get around to the wheel part and it was time to ship the thing.
Well, they made it
70%,
but,
not 90%.
Yeah.
But we still called it
a
wheelbarrow. We didn't call it like jagged metal like strut barrow that just like plows into the ground. You know, like,
I don't know if that's how the word barrow works.
So
Xerxes' inability to thesaurus means it goes higher. Got it.
No.
I can play this shithead game.
It's more like a giant metal bowl with handles.
It's like
how about that?
Those are called walks.
No, it's a wheelbarrow without the wheel. It's just a barrow.
It's a
you guys
walk
are really
with dirt in it.
Burning way off topic here. I don't
so
know
it goes below Star Tropics, above Lunar Silver Star Story Complete, unless somebody.
Yes, it goes below Lunar because Lunar
See,
is finished.
Clay's going to push it below Lunar. So.
Okay, how much lower? Let's make this.
Well, you know, I would like to keep it a below Tales
thing
of the
is,
Abyss.
I think
that
it is
bad.
Maybe better than Lunar. And the reason I think that is simply because it does actually try to do things that are interesting.
Exactly.
In a way that Lunar doesn't.
So.
Yeah.
Okay,
but,
so.
I mean, it doesn't do it
that's
well.
That's two.
What do you mean it doesn't do it well?
That's two, and that's also the highest place it's going to get. So, agree or disagree? Are you going to add your vote to that word? That's the highest position it's going to get.
I mean, no matter what I say, you're not going to listen to me. So if you're going to put it above Lunar and below Star Tropics, fine. I'll accept that.
That's where it goes. Below Star Tropics, right above Lunar. Silver Star Story.
You're damn wrong, but I have to accept
it. Hey, no, you signed on to this.
No. I can still say that you're wrong. Doesn't mean that you're going to change the list. No,
it's scientifically correct.
Actually, that's actually what we say, you know. We're wrong, but that's where it goes. Because that's where it goes.
We're wrong, slinky, 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 but there it goes.
Hey, I didn't do that this time, all right?
much to Clay's chagrin.
So whoever you are, if this was your first episode, congratulations, it gets better.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.